Welcome, everyone, to episode 434 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to continue with our Bye Felicia series. We are saying goodbye to the Lakers, Blazers, Knicks, Wizards, and Grizzlies. So we will talk about what's next for all five franchises this offseason. We are recording this before Clippers, Mavericks on Sunday, so we will finish our first round Bye Felicias after one of those teams bows out as well. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we're recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed. Engage with us in real time or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is a guy who I'm sure is very sad to be saying goodbye to the Los Angeles Lakers after the first round of the playoffs. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
It's going well. What's that comment all about?
You posted in the DM thread that you said you had no dog in the race, but you were not upset that the Lakers were knocked out early.
Okay, that is true, but it's like, so here's the thing, right? I just think it would have been such a shame for Phoenix to bow out in round one, given the season that they had. And we've kind of seen LeBron in the finals quite a few times before. I'm open to new suggestions, is all I'm saying. I like that it's not so LeBron-centric all the time. I mean, there are limits to how many different things Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy can say in a final series that features LeBron. We've heard it all at this point. I want something new.
So you are not Ethan Sherwood Strauss, in other words?
No, very much.
Good. All right. Well, let's start with the Lakers, Mort, because the defending champions, unfortunately, injuries just completely ruin their chances of defending this title. Yeah. You know, LeBron suffers the ankle injury, AD's banged up throughout really the second half of the season, goes down in game four, can't play game five, game six leaves only after 5 minutes. LeBron also was just clearly, you know, he was playing, but he was not 100% healthy. So I don't want to go too far into what went wrong for them this year, because I think a fully healthy Lakers team would have had a much better chance of defending that title. It's as simple as when your two best players get hurt. That's probably all she wrote for your team. So they have a couple of big decisions to make this offseason, though, and I want to go right into those. First of which is Dennis Schroeder, who they reportedly offered a 4-year, $84 million extension before the trade deadline. That was from Brian Windhorst of ESPN, I believe. He declined it. They asked him about it at the end of season press conference, and he said he didn't decline it, you know, as like retribution for him being involved in trade talks for Kyle Lowry. He just said, it's a business. And I guess $21 million a year is not enough for Dennis Schroeder. So if you're the Lakers, Mort, you don't have an easy way to replace him if he leaves. But how much would you be willing to spend on him to retain him?
You know how when some people make a mistake and then other people make an even larger mistake?
Mm-hmm.
Then it's really, really important that you don't make a third mistake. And that would be a third mistake if the Lakers went into this and said, well, we'll up our offer.
Yeah.
They shouldn't. The $84 million on its surface was already way too much for Dennis Schroeder. For him to reject that contract offer, I think, was ludicrous. So here's the thing. He's not a particularly well-liked NBA player.
Yes.
That is just the fact of the issues here. I mean, there are a lot of players around the league and seems that flat out don't like this dude. Really don't like him. He's had a history of locker room issues. He's not superbly talented, honestly. I think the perception of Dennis Schroeder is better than the actual player himself. I do think he sort of rehabbed his image a bit in Oklahoma City, which is, like, that's fair. But we haven't reached that point where he's like, oh, ultra super teammate Dennis Schroeder. We all love him. And he's a reluctant three-point shooter, I want to say. He's a reluctant team-first guy. Like, I think he plays a selfish brand of basketball. I wouldn't offer that same deal. I wouldn't offer $20 million at all. I barely offer $15 million, if that. I don't think he's that player. I would much rather see someone else out there make that mistake if I'm the Lakers. Like what the actual number is, I think that's hard to say. It really depends on role. Personally, I think I would be nervous if it's about above 15. I really would. This is a guy who I just don't trust as a player or as a teammate, locker room guy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, from the Lakers' perspective, it matters less because, again, they're basically bumped up against the salary cap as is. So if they lose him, they're not going to have the cap room to replace him. So when you're talking about valuation here, it's more what type of contract can we sign him to where if this thing goes really wrong and we need to get off of him?
Yes.
Like, you know, if it's 4 years, $60 million, that is going to be far more tradable than 4 years, $90 million down the road. So
very much so, yes, major difference.
Right, and I think it's fair to wonder whether Schroeder can be the starting point guard on a championship caliber team. Like, you're right, he did rehab his value in OKC, but he did so coming off the bench in a super sub role. And I wonder if that's possibly the better role for him, a la Lou Williams, what Jordan Clarkson's doing in Utah, versus, you know, you can argue that LeBron James is technically the point guard in LA, so maybe they don't need a ball dominant, like Chris Paul type, you know, a full-time ball handler. And so maybe Schroeder makes sense for certain team constructs. Maybe he would make sense in Dallas next to Luka, that type of thing. No. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to, I wouldn't be rushing to give him more than $20 million. I agree, even $20 million sounds steep.
Dirk Nowitzki would never allow Dennis Schroeder to.
That's true. That's true. I forgot Dirk. Yeah.
Oh,
Dirk,
yeah. Dirk's, I don't even know if that's out there, so I'm not going to say it, but you and I know.
Yeah.
You Dirk and I is... know what Dirk said back in the day about Schroeder. We know where he stands. It's, look, here's the thing for me. Whether it's a super sub role, you could argue the whole LeBron James is the de facto point guard, but let's agree on something. If you are the de facto playmaker, be it LeBron, Luka, James Harden, those type of guys, then you need guys around you who can spot up and hit threes. Schroeder, as well, is not that guy.
Yeah.
So even in a situation where he plays off of a superstar who demands a lot of attention, his game is still not built to being a perfect solution for that type of player. He's a pick-and-roll basketball player. He's a guy who needs the ball in his hands to be effective. So that doesn't really fly a whole lot with a lot of these superstars who are out there. And he's just not flat-out good enough to have the ball in his hands like 80-85% of the time. He just isn't. I think him and his agent turning down that contract was asinine, and I think it's even more asinine if a team out there is willing to give him more than what he turned down. If a team out there gives him the $84 million or more, like 90 or 95, or God forbid 100, I'm putting them at the very top of my, oh dear God, what did you do list after summer.
Yeah, yeah, it's a fair point. Schroeder, no, in OKC, shot 38.5 from three, but that is looking more and more like an outlier season. He was a 33.5 this year. He never shot above 35.1 in any other season besides last year. So very good point about his three-point shooting not necessarily being compatible in that secondary role. He is the most notable free agent they have, but he's not the only one. Lakers' beloved fans, icon, Alex Caruso is also a free agent. I think it is safe to say he will be looking at a hefty raise over the $2.75 million he earned last season. So how much would you spend on to retain Caruso, Mort?
It's a good question. So let's first just walk through what he is as a basketball player, because I think that's very important, like, to get the context right. Mm-hmm. He's not someone who will fill up the box score. He's very defensive oriented. He's sneaky athletic. He's a guy who flies under the radar a whole lot, but he's not a guy you can use in a two-way capacity in the same sense as many other players. Like, he's a defender first and foremost, and then he's an opportunistic scorer, which, you know, that's fine, and he's a steady three-point shooter, but he's not a guy you can expect to, like, break guys down off the dribble and then hit step-back threes or that kind of sort, at least not on a consistent basis. So I would think somewhere along the lines of, like, if I'm really getting pushed, then maybe somewhere around the neighborhood of the non-tax MLE.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that seems like a fitting contract for both sides.
Yeah. That's exactly what... Yeah, I was thinking like between 8 to 10 million per year.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah. That sounds like... Because the thing is, like when you're a good enough shooter and you're like a good defender, at the very least, there's like a basement, you can say, of financial stability that you would get. Like there's a certain value for that type of player. And him with his energy and passion, to be honest with you, that's where I'll just put a little extra couple millions on top. And that aligns to about 8 to 10 million a year.
Yeah, I mean, for what you said about Schroeder, like there are questions about whether he plays winning basketball. I don't think, I don't have those questions about Caruso. He is scrappy role player, glue guy, just fills in whatever you need. So if I'm the Lakers and I have to retain one of the two, especially given the respective price points that I'm expecting both guys to, like if both of them are going to get the same contract, that's one thing, but I think you're going to get Caruso for probably less than half the price than you will Schroeder. I think it's going to be pretty clear they should prioritize Caruso among those two.
Yeah, absolutely. I like if push came to shove and you asked me in totality which of those two I think is the better player, and if we include like teammate, chemistry, all these things, I'm going Caruso 10 times out of 10. Like Schroeder might be more talented, but Caruso is one of those guys who really fights. Yeah. I mean, he's one of those guys who is playing like he's the 15th man on the roster. And I think to be compatible with LeBron, you need to put in that extra effort. You can't just try to like skirt by on talent.
Right.
That's never going to fly with LeBron. I think Caruso is like tailor-made to play next to a guy like LeBron.
Well, speaking of putting forth the extra effort, the Lakers also brought in a guy at the trade or after the trade deadline from a buyout. Andre Drummond, who Lord knows have had questions about his motor and heart really since he came into the league, ended up getting phased out throughout that Lakers-Suns series, didn't even play in Game 6. They ended up benching him for Marc Gasol, and his arrival to the team led to some, I don't want to say confrontation, but you know, Gasol was frustrated by it. So Gasol is under contract for next year. Drummond is a free agent. Would you be prioritizing bringing him back at all if you're the Lakers, and if so, at what price?
I would prioritize bringing him back for one reason. You still need regular season wins. You still need regular season production. I understand that Andre Drummond is not a playoff performer at this point. He's just not. He's too slow. He's too big. Like, he can't move around. But you still need to get into the playoffs in the first place. So it really depends on, do you feel comfortable if you're the Lakers that you can basically just coast with LeBron and AD? Presumably you can. But like if those two guys get hurt, as we saw this year, I mean, that's a free fall right there. So having Andre Drummond is a nice security blanket to at least scrap out a couple wins here and there just because of his sheer production. That said, you need to pay him accordingly. You need to pay him as a regular season player and not someone you can count on in the playoffs. Ultimately, the NBA comes down to how you spend your money. If you occupy a major percentage of the salary cap and you are not a fully functional playoff performer, you are hurting your team. So if Drummond is looking for like $20 million a year, no. Like I wouldn't do it. I'm almost at that mindset of, again, something similar to Alex Caruso, like the non-tax MLE, and then you just ride him in the regular season. You don't care if he has like an all-star year in the regular season. Like, it's fine. Just go ahead. Just chalk it up. And then in the playoffs, when push comes to shove, you just go, yeah, great. Thank you for getting us to where we are.
Yeah.
You can now play off the bench and get spot minutes here and there when we can use you.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, if nothing else, it can appease Anthony Davis, who clearly does not want to play center ever, really, but especially during the regular season.
What is that all about? And he's so...
I don't totally blame him, given his injury history and how quickly he tends to get banged up. Like, you're trying to save the mileage on your body.
It's the same possession, more or less.
This is a conversation for another day, and I saw, I think it was Vince Goodwill of Yahoo Sports bringing up yesterday, but like I do wonder if not to call the Lakers bubble frauds or anything like that. They won the title legitimately. But having those 4 months off and then only having 8 seeding games before the playoffs.
Yeah.
I wonder if Anthony Davis is ever going to go into the playoffs that healthy.
Again. Right. And also, Anthony Davis hitting virtually every mid-range right. shot in human history during the bubble as well. I agree. I don't think the Lakers were bubble frauds, but I do think it's fair to question whether they would have won the ring last year under quote-unquote normal circumstances.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, for Drummond, I'm with you. I would not spend anywhere. If he wants even $10 million, I'm out.
Yeah, right? It sounds like, let's just get this out of the way. That sounds preposterous in and of itself when you look at the stat line of this guy. I know a lot of people are like, Drummond is a guy who legitimately can average 20 and 20, and I don't disagree with that. Like, if there's a guy in this league who could have a 2020 season, it's Andre Drummond.
Yeah.
But it's the stats are so empty, Brian. Like, I know I've actually, a couple years ago, you and I had a podcast where I started harboring against this whole, oh, empty stats, is that really a thing? Yes, with Andre Drummond it is.
Yeah.
Yes, with Drummond absolutely is.
Look at Hassan Whiteside, who put up similar numbers in his career at times, and he had to settle for a one-year minimum deal last year.
Yeah.
Like, that archetype of center is just, if you pay them, you regret it immediately. Like, they just don't. I mean, Enes Kanter too. You could,
right.
You know, he could play 35 minutes in game and average 15 and 15, but I think he ended up getting the room MLE a year or two ago. Like, you're just not paying that type of center big money anymore. And it sucks for Drummond. Like, had he been in the league 20 years ago, he'd be a max guy, no brainer. But the league has changed, and he's just, you know, he's going to have to adjust accordingly.
There's a Field of Dream quotes here, right? Like, if you give it to them, you will regret it.
Yeah,
like I said,
yeah.
About the centers, the old school centers.
Yeah.
So one thing about, since we're on the Lakers, Brian, I want to ask you something about Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
So the year that he had, it was very pedestrian, like just from a productive perspective. I understand there were lingering injury issues. I understand he wasn't fully healthy and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm slightly concerned that he's just never going to be fully healthy over an extended period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of dreadful about the scenario of him like declining a little bit just because of the eternal rehab and eternal injuries. Do you think he'll ever reach the level that we saw him in last year again?
I mean,
I hope so. By the way, let me preface. I hope so.
Yeah. I think there is a reasonable chance that the Lakers' best window has already closed, and right. Luckily they capitalized on it with the title last year. So, you know, the LeBron AD era, no matter what, will not go down as a disappointment. But right. You know, LeBron's only getting older. He's going to be 37, I believe. He's going to be 38. No, 37.
No, 37 in December. December. Late December.
Yeah. So, you know, it'll be 37 and a half by the time the playoffs roll around next year.
Yeah.
AD, I mean, you said it, like, just tends to get, you know, nicked up throughout the regular season. So, again, if you go into a postseason where you don't have 4 months off beforehand, you know, even if he's not, like, leaves the game and misses the rest of the playoffs hurt, I don't know what we get anywhere close to 100% healthy AD in the playoffs again. And then given all of these constraints with the rest of the supporting cast, like, it's going to get progressively more difficult to build out around these guys because you're already bumping up against the salary cap right now and you don't have really a great depth chart at this point. So I don't know. It's like the rest of the West is only going to get better. And yeah. It's hard to see how the Lakers get substantially better from here. Like, they can trade Kyle Kuzma. That's probably their one best way to upgrade. But other than that, I don't know.
No. I don't even think Kuzma has a whole lot of trade value, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and like Montrezl Harrell, you know, even regardless of whether he picks up his player option, like, even if he declines his player option, and they rescind qualifying offers to everyone, decline the team option on Alphonso, McKinney, like, they're still about $5 million away from the cap. And they'll have three, four, five players under contract at that point. Like, it's not a great situation.
It really isn't. And the fact that the Lakers' supporting cast this year just wasn't playoff caliber. I mean, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope shot 38% from the field in the playoffs. Kyle Kuzma, 29%. Wes Matthews, 30%. Like, Montrezl Harrell couldn't even be on the floor, right? I know Snoop Dogg was all about, why isn't Harrell playing? Come on, Snoop. He's not good. Like, it's just, in the playoff setting, he's just not good. I think the Lakers are built, structured rather, in a way that really makes last year much of an outlier just in terms of roster construction.
Yeah.
Like, this team isn't built traditionally to be a I don't know what you can call, like, a sustainable playoff threat. So many of these guys, they have to bench.
Yeah. Or, like, yeah, at least, like, a real title threat. And I think the problem, too, is that, you know, they're not... Like, last year, they were, because they're coming off the title, you get a Marc Gasol on a minimum deal, and you get Wes Matthews on a minimum deal. So, like, you got the ring chasers, you got Markieff Morris back on a minimum deal.
Yeah.
Now you have the Brooklyn Nets to contend with for those ring chasers. And the Brooklyn Nets proved, because they have all three of those guys, even if one of them is hurt for a good portion of the season, they can still finish among the top teams in the East. And, you know, we saw last night, even though Harden leaves a minute into the game, they still beat the Bucks. Like, the Nets are going to be the premier ring chasing team next year. Yep. So the Lakers might not get that caliber of talent in the supporting cast. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not ruling out the Lakers. Like, as long as they have LeBron and AD, they'll be a playoff team if those guys stay healthy. Yep. Are they going to go into next season as the championship favorites like they were this year? I don't see how they could.
No. No, especially not if they retain the same roster.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go to the Portland Trail Blazers now, Mort, who suffered a very, very disappointing exit from the playoffs, not even beating the Jamal Murray, Will Barton, PJ Dozier-less Denver Nuggets. Afterward, they went ahead and I think they said it was a mutual separation with Terry Stotts, their head coach. So they are now looking for a new head coach. Let's start there, Mort, because really it was very unlike Damian Lillard. But after, like, shortly after that news came out, we see multiple reporters saying Dame wants Jason Kidd as the next head coach. He told it directly to Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports, who seems to have, you know, be very, very plugged into Lillard's camp. So what did you think of that and Kidd in particular?
I think that Oakland connection is a bit too strong.
Mm.
I mean, Kidd is from that area. Obviously, Dame is too. And Oakland guys have that same Seattle thing where it's like they're blood brothers, all of them. And I think that skewers the way Lillard should look at this. Jason Kidd, first and foremost, is not a good head coach. There is a reason Giannis Antetokounmpo got significantly better after the Jason Kidd tenure. But let's also just bring up the fact that Kidd has a lot of issues on top of that, just in terms of perception, in terms of his aspirations. Like, he wants to be more than just a coach. I think he's made that perfectly clear, just trying to create a coup in Brooklyn back in the day. I just don't think that's the right approach. I don't understand why NBA teams want to regurgitate Jason Kidd as a head coach, and I really don't understand why NBA players would.
Yeah,
I guess it's the whole Kidd was a great point guard, as such, he automatically is a good coach.
Yeah, that's what this is from Haynes' report. It says Lillard and Kidd have a great relationship that goes back years. Lillard genuinely respects Kidd's basketball acumen and knowledge of the game and believes he can help take his game and the team to the next level. The Lakers front office has raved about Kidd, expressing how he's been a phenomenal presence in the organization, from his innovative ideas to his communicating skills and his ability to rally the troops.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes, and it's very possible that Jason Kidd, in the role that he's in, has been very good. But you're right. All we know is what he did in Brooklyn and Milwaukee as the head coach. Both of those tenures were underwhelming. Lord knows.
Oh, that's a kind word.
Yeah. And you know, he's got plenty of off-court issues in his past that I don't think the league should be, you know. I think that's at least a question you have to answer if you hire this guy. Why are you okay with hiring someone with that sort of background, especially when you've got, you know, other deserving candidates in the mix as well? Mm-hmm. Apparently, you know, Jeff Van Gundy, Mike D'Antoni, Juwan Howard, Chauncey Billups are all going to be in the mix as well. And Haynes says Lillard has a good relationship with Billups, but his preference is Kidd. So, it sounds like it's probably going to be one of Billups or Kidd based on the early reporting from here. Would you feel better about Billups than Kidd, or would you just go in a totally different direction here?
Well, recently I learned something about Billups that I didn't know, as did you, yeah. I think. Which just speaks about, like, the off-the-court issues,
mm-hmm.
which, like you said, the organization would have to defend why they bring that type of player in with those accusations attached to him.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I wouldn't feel great about that at all, either guy, for that particular reason. And I understand that people will be like, oh, think basketball. It doesn't matter what they did. Yeah, it matters. It absolutely matters. You're a fool if you think otherwise. And just one question here. Lillard said he thinks it could take his game to the next level, like with Kidd, right?
Yeah.
In the playoffs, he averaged 34 points, 10-plus assists, shot 45% from downtown on 13 attempts, 94% from the free-throw line on over 8 attempts per game. What kind of level does he think Jason Kidd can unlock that he hasn't already unlocked himself?
Right. Like, I don't think the... I would never say the problem with the Blazers is Damian Lillard. That
right.
is literally the last place I would look.
Lillard had a PER of 30.5 and a true shooting percentage of 66. Hell, he even only averaged 2.2 turnovers per game while he... That's peak. Like, you can't get substantially better than what he did in that six-game series. It is the cast around him.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't a coaching issue. This is a roster construction issue.
So let's talk about that cast, because we're going to have some interesting decisions coming up here. The first is Norman Powell. He has an $11.6 million player option. I think it's safe to say he's going to decline that because he's looking at a big raise over that.
Yes.
What is the right price for Norman Powell?
In the area of 18 to 20 million a year, but some team will probably offer him 22. Mm-hmm. And then if you're the Blazers, you kind of look at it and go, we gave up the future for him, Gary Trent Jr.
Yep.
We have to do it. So, like, they have to go all in on this guy. They really do. And if that means $22 million a year, so be it.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. This is what I think, I forget the exact term. I think it's John Hollinger calls it the bird rights trap, where because you can't, it's similar to what the Lakers are going to have with Schroeder, where if this guy walks, you're still not going to be able to easily replace him. Like, you're not going to have the cap room to get a similar caliber player. So you either, you either have to overpay him to keep him, or you lose him and you get substantially worse. Now, Powell, in his 27 regular season games with the Blazers, he averaged 17 points, shot 44.3 from the field, 36.1 from three. You know, filled in pretty admirably as that third main offensive piece next to Damon CJ. But, it's hard to see how this team doesn't go probably into luxury tax territory if they retain Norman Powell.
Yeah.
And, I just don't know. I mean, if you're retaining this roster that couldn't even beat a Jamal Murray-less Nuggets team, is it worth keeping all of these guys together? So that goes into the other big guy here. They've got Yusuf Nurkic on a non-guaranteed $12 million salary. They say they're going to guarantee it, but after the Game 6, loss, he had some very interesting comments. He said, as far as right now, I'm just going to get away from basketball and see what my next step should be. We'll see what's going to happen. I'm not sure if I'm coming back or what the team direction is. We'll look at that later. At the beginning of the year, I wish my role was bigger. I think I could help even more, but like I said, I was respectful and tried to do what they asked of me. I don't know what the future stands for me or for the team and this team. And then he was asked if he wanted to be back with the team next season. He said, in the right situation, yes. We'll see. I don't know yet because this is not it.
Okay. Lay it out, Yusuf. Okay. Yeah.
So what do you make of those comments? And do you think the Blazers need to move on from Nurkic or should they keep him?
I think everything needs to be in play right now. Everything. Like, preferably you want to build around Dame, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you, and if that's what you want, I think everyone but Dame should be fair game.
Yeah.
Nurkic, CJ, Covington, like a sign and trade situation with Norman Powell, like Derek Jones Jr., everything is like readily available. And look, you also have to think of yourself as an NBA organization who needs to do the best for you moving forward. So if a Godfather offer comes in for Dame, what the hell do you do then? I mean, this isn't just Nurkic. It's like all over. But for Nurkic, I really think he's... So here's the thing, right? I mean, you and I know as well that Nurkic has a reputation internally as being a bit of a selfish player.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that component to take into account too. Like, he wants a certain amount of touches, he wants a certain role. Will he get that anywhere? Is there a place where a team will go, no, you know what? We think you were mismanaged in Portland. We want to make you the centerpiece of our offense. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think, honestly, this was the best role he could get. At his peak in Portland, he was the third option as an old-school throwback center offensively. Like, no one's out there is going to go, hey, Nurkic, come in and be our number one or number two.
Right.
So I don't know what he wants.
Yeah. I don't know either, because you're not going to direct touches away from Dame and CJ to feed Nurkic right. more post plays or anything like that. So, part of me says they should definitely pick up, like, fully guarantee the salary. $12 million for him is a fair price, and you're not going to find a better starting center for that price on the open market, most likely. Unless Andre Drummond comes along, I can't find anything. But even then, I would rather have Nurkic at $12 million than Drummond at $12
million. I would rather have Yusuf Nurkic at $12 million than Drummond at $3 million.
Yeah, right. But I agree with you. Everything needs to be on the table. Yes, let's go into the Dame and CJ stuff now, because that was immediately, as soon as they got knocked out, that was a question. Are they at least going to start entertaining Dame trade offers? Sham Sharani of The Athletic said, you know, teams, even in big markets, are at least keeping an eye on the situation. There is absolutely no urgency for Portland to listen to offers. They have him under contract for 3 more years, and he has a $48.8 million player option in 24-25. So, this is not a flight risk. I mean, Dame has repeatedly said he wants to stay in Portland his whole career. You know, he wants to follow the Dirk Nowitzki template of, like, struggle through it and win one ring, and it's much more fulfilling than going and building a super team elsewhere. But it's clear that he is very frustrated right now by how they flamed out this year and how inconsistent they were. So, what team even has the pieces to engage with the Portland on a Dame offer?
Well, two teams comes to mind, but they won't make sense.
Okay. Well, I saw one person, one Celtics fan, suggest that Kemba for Dame is a fair trade. So, but yes, which teams come to mind for you?
Well, obviously, we're talking about New Orleans. We're talking about OKC because they can offer the draft picks. So, mm-hmm. But those just don't make sense on, like, a timeline perspective. So I don't think those are good destinations. They could probably get him, but to what point?
Right. What about, I mean, Philly has come up repeatedly in years past with CJ more than Dame, but...
Oh.
But I don't think they would do... Let's get to CJ too here. Let's just open it up. Because CJ's on a... He also signed an extension. It's 3 years, $100 million. So he's also under contract for 23-24.
Right.
I'm not convinced that contract is necessarily good. Or has a ton of trade value. So I think if you're talking like a Simmons-CJ swap, Portland would have to include more, not Philly.
Yes. Like, is that even... Of course.
I don't know. I mean, I hope it's not up for debate, but I think it might. That might sound like homerism, and I genuinely don't think it is.
No. Look, you know me. I have been complaining about Ben for a while about certain things, but I'm not an idiot here, obviously. I mean, we're talking about a 6'10", maybe 6'. I can't figure out how tall he is.
He's listed as 6'11".
Like, right? Like, yeah. It's all over. Okay. But I'm just going to go 6'10". I think that feels a little bit more right.
Yeah.
6'10", 240, 245, superbly athletic, one of the best defenders in the entire league, one of the best facilitators in the entire league, especially at that height. I mean, no, and he's younger as well. I think he's, what, 24?
Yeah, 24, 25.
All right, but like he is in a year or two away from his prime.
Right.
Like, he's on the upwards trajectory, where CJ is going to be 30 this year, if memory serves, or maybe he's 29?
Yeah, he turns 30 in year, September, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's a no-brainer. Of course the Blazers would have to include something else.
Yeah.
But I think the more interesting conversation is Dame for Ben.
Yeah.
Because I brought that up a couple of years ago. I actually think you and I had a segment about it on this podcast 2, maybe 3, could even be 4 years ago, honestly, where I was just like, look, Joel and Dame.
Yeah.
That would be mind-blowingly good offensively.
Yes.
And you would still have that last line of defense in Joe.
Yeah.
So if you can just build out the roster with 3-and-D guys, there you go, right?
Yeah.
Like, that would be an amazing team.
And to be clear, Philly would have to send more. This is not, I am not suggesting a Ben for Dame one-on-one.
Bye-bye, it might see Stiple.
Probably, or Shake. I think Shake would probably be gone in that.
Yeah.
Or not Shake, sorry, Maxey.
Shake.
Okay. I mean, Shake might be gone too, because he can't hit a goddamn bucket to save his life right now. But yeah, Maxey, I think. It would be Simmons, Maxey. Simmons, ideally they would keep one of Maxey or Thibault. And then just a ton of picks. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's it. We'll see what happens to Philly in the playoffs moving forward. But I think that's probably the Dame permutation that makes the most sense.
It is.
For CJ,
yeah.
Can you find a team that makes sense for them to sniff around?
Well, so you brought up a dumb Twitter argument, so mm-hmm. I'll bring up one as well. I saw a Blazers fan say, I think CJ for Zach LaVine is pretty reasonable.
Why? Why would the Bulls do that?
That's what I don't get either. I decided not to.
Unless Zach LaVine has told the Bulls I am not re-signing there in 2022.
Right, but I mean, there no report as such has indicated, like, he's actually pretty optimistic about Vucevic and all that. I think the perception of CJ's trade value, like you actually alluded to this, I think it's much higher than what it is. I mean, this is a guy who's going to earn almost $31 million here next season. The year after that is $33 million, and then he concludes with a whopping $35 million salary when he'll be, what, 32, 33?
Yeah, it'll be his age 32 season.
Okay, like, you can still be effective at age 32. I'm not saying otherwise, but it's not likely that he is superbly efficient at that point in time.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is when you're paying someone that much, I don't want to call him like a one-way player, but you know, he's not a great defender by any means, and he is a super great offensive player. He's very efficient. He's, you know, he's a career almost 40% shooter. He took 8.9 threes per game. He hit him at 40.2% this year. So he's a really, really good offensive player.
Yes.
But in the playoffs, he will get targeted defensively. So you have to put him on a roster. Like, New Orleans was the one I could maybe see. But again, when you're looking at Zion and Brandon Ingram's timelines, he's just so far away from that. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to come up with a destination right now where it's like, oh, yeah, okay, they have the defenders in place. Like, Boston, if they could get him, sure, but, like, you're not trading Kemba for CJ if you're Portland.
Right.
You know, it's just the Nuggets, I guess, maybe, but how do you match the salary for him?
And it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense either, like... Because you have Jamal, who's probably going to come back. Or not probably going to come back, but he's going to come back eventually.
Yeah.
And he's going to be a high-volume shot taker, so CJ would be more of a luxury guy. And then you can argue, if he's a luxury guy, will you really want to dedicate $30 million on him being the number third player in that offensive totem pole? I don't think so.
Right. The Heat would be one, but... Yeah. I don't know what, like, if they aren't going to offer Jimmy and Bam, I mean, they have cap space, so it wouldn't have to be a balanced trade in terms of salary. But, you know, if you're Portland, if you're trading CJ, you need to get something of value back that convinces Dame that you're ready to compete right away. And I don't think Tyler Hero is it.
No, not on Dame's timeline, which is also important to note, right? That if you build around Dame, you just don't have the time to go in on a rookie or picks or, like, young guys. You need to get guys who are in their primes. Like, if you get a guy who's under the age of 26, like, no. Like, you almost need to have guys who are 26 or above. That's just, like, that's fits his timeline.
What about Indiana? Because I'm just thinking they have so many of those, like,
they do
good salary matching contracts, and if they're ready to break up. Like, what if they did Sabonis or Turner? And, yeah, I mean, maybe just Sabonis for CJ.
I wouldn't do that if I'm the Pacers.
Yeah, I don't think I would either.
I mean, I really think Sabonis is getting underrated to, like, a perverse extent. See the effect that Nate Duncan has?
I know. Or they might... Yeah, I mean, you could do Turner and... I don't know, man. Turner and Brogdon for CJ and Nurkic. Like, I don't know.
No, Turner and Brogdon. So that's actually a nice fit to Dame.
Yeah.
Like, I really like that. Like, Brogdon as your CJ replacement, and then Turner as your Nurkic replacement, because he can hit threes, you can play a five-out offense, and he'll still give you the shot blocking. Like, okay, he won't give you the passing, but Brogdon is a much better initiator than CJ is at any point, so you won't be missing out on the playmaking, because then you'd have both Dame and Brogdon being guys who can set up others and, like, initiate the offense. Like, if you start there, and it's a Brogdon-Turner Dame trio, and you build something within that structure, that could work. I still think they need, like, one more established all-star to, like, round everything out. I don't know who they get. I don't know how they get that person. I don't know who that person is. But that's at least a nice structure. I mean, Brogdon is very, very used to playing off of a superstar, right?
Yeah.
Like, he is fully in that mindset of, I'm not a number one guy. I don't need to be a number one guy. I'll play whatever role you need me to play. I played next to Giannis. The last couple of years I played next to Sabonis. Now I'll play next to Dame. Like, he's already there mentally.
Yeah.
And we know Miles Turner isn't a guy who, like, steps up to score 17, 18 points per game, so he'll get involved as well in a different capacity. Then it's just a matter of finding out, how do you round out the rest of that roster? I don't know. Like, and also, they have some young guys. Like, Anthony Simons has value.
Yeah.
He has legit trade value. He's good. Nasir Little might not yet, but if they hang on to him a year and he starts showing signs, then as soon as his trade value is built up a little bit, then find some place for him.
Yeah. It's going to be a really interesting offseason for the Blazers because it's very clear that they can't just run this thing back. So, yeah, maybe we'll bat around Indiana. That feels like the most realistic landing spot if they are going to move on from CJ, just given the salary constraints. So let's now go to the Memphis Grizzlies, Mort, who made it into the playoffs, which was already a win in and of itself thanks to the play-in tournament, but did not prove to be much of a match for the Utah Jazz. I think the number one storyline to monitor heading into the offseason for them is Jaren Jackson Jr., who is heading into the final year of his rookie contract, which means he is eligible for an extension. You know, didn't play a ton this year, Mort, and didn't look like his old self when he did play.
Right.
So what is the right price for a Jaren Jackson Jr. extension if you are the Memphis Grizzlies?
So, full disclosure, I'm wobbling a bit on a thing here. I kind of want to play it safe and just answer your question.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a part of me that has maybe a hot take.
Oh, okay.
I would want, if I'm Memphis, to try to get Evan Mobley in the draft.
Oh.
And that might require a sacrifice of Jaren Jackson Jr.
Interesting.
I think Evan Mobley is what Jaren Jackson Jr. is supposed to be.
Mm.
And I think Mobley's game is much more tailor-made for Ja Morant than Jackson Jr.'s is.
That's very interesting.
I look, Memphis fans are going to hate me for even suggesting it. And I get it. But I have long-term concerns with Jackson. I really do. He's not a great rebounder, first and foremost. And I think at the end of the day, regardless of whether or not you prioritize rebounding, you still need it.
Mm-hmm.
Mobley comes in, he's an immediate rebounder. He's that good. Like, the defense is already there, comparable. Like, Mobley, a lot, like, he projects as a high-end NBA defender. So you get that role in there as well. He's also got a high release point. He's got a very clean shot. Like, he's not going to be as dynamic a three-point shooter as Jaren Jackson Jr. Jackson Jr. as a three-point shooter will always be better than Evan Mobley. It is ridiculous the degrees of difficulty he takes threes, Jackson Jr., that is, and hits them. Like, we've talked about this before. His shot selection and his shot variety from three is insane. But Mobley is just a bit more polished. You can run the offense a little bit more through him. He's a better passer. He's a guy who I think projects as a better long-term player than Jaren Jackson Jr. So if there's a team out there that's still all in on Jaren Jackson Jr. and they have a very high draft pick, preferably second overall, which I think is where Mobley should go, I wouldn't hate if the Memphis Grizzlies took a step back and said, okay, we might not be better next year, but we'll be better in the long term. We'll give up Jaren Jackson Jr. We'll give up maybe a couple of, oh God, I hate saying this, we'll give up like Xavier Tillman or Brandon Clark, because they have to give up more to get Mobley. They just do. And then we run out at Ja Morant, Evan Mobley core from there, and then, you know, we build accordingly. I think that's the play. Also, it gives them more financial flexibility. Like, instead of then re-upping with Jaren, like, after this year, they get, like, not a do-over, that's a bad word, but they get a new guy on a new rookie deal that lasts for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Providing them with financial flexibility. Is that a hot take? I think it's kind of reasonable, but, I mean, it's still, when you talk about trading a guy of Jaren Jackson Jr.'s caliber, it feels hot takey.
I don't know if it is. I think it would have been last year, but given what happened this year, last year I would have said Jaren Jackson Jr. is almost a no-brainer max extension guy.
Right.
Now I would not give him a max extension. And that's not saying he couldn't earn it this year and then you can do it next year in restricted free agency, but and I don't know if this is necessarily a fair comparison, but I think you have to look at what's happening with Dallas and with Kristaps Porzingis in particular, and at least have that in the back of your mind when you're negotiating with Jaren Jackson Jr. Oh,
that is tough. Yeah, I agree with you, but that's like you just every Memphis fan who listens to this, all the hairs on their arms just starting raising. Yeah. Like it's.
I mean, it's fair. Look, I mean, I hope Jaren Jackson Jr. gets back on the trajectory that he was last right. year. Because I think if he does, he's a great fit next to Ja Morant. But you're now reaching the point where you know Ja Morant is the centerpiece of your franchise for the next at least 7 years, ideally, and hopefully much longer than that. You are building around Ja Morant. So now you have to decide, is Jaren Jackson Jr. on this the type of contract that he is going to want, is he that foundational piece? Or should we start to look elsewhere? And I don't want to give up on him because he's still so young. He's not even, he turns 22 in September. So there yeah, is still,
and he's good.
Yeah, there is plenty of room for growth here. And we saw a lot of it last year. This is really just reflective of the injury this year. And, you know, we see like Jonathan Isaac. We saw him take a discounted extension because of the injury history. We saw it with Markelle Fultz as well. Like yep. you said, even with Joel Embiid, you saw, you know, he took a max extension, but there were protections built in. So maybe that's the solution. But I don't know. I don't think I would do full no-brainer max extension for Jaren Jackson Jr. this offseason. If you can get him, you know, like what Boston got with Jaylen Brown, where you get him for less than the max. If you can get him at 4 years, $100 million instead of, you know, $130-some, then I start to more seriously entertain the extension. But
that was the Giannis extension back in the day. That was yeah. 4 years, $100 million.
Yeah, and that would I would feel more comfortable with. It's just, I don't know. I would just would hate to get locked into a guy who, you know, I don't want to say Kristaps, but like that's my fear if right. I'm Memphis.
I think what you're saying is, if I catch you right, is the ceiling could be super high, but the floor could also be really low.
Yeah, and like you don't want, I mean, we're seeing it now in Dallas where because Kristaps is on this deal, there's a real chance that he's going to hamstring the ceiling of a Luka-led team, which totally sucks because Luka is a transformative talent. I'm not saying Ja Morant is as good as Luka Doncic, but Ja Morant has multiple All-Star games in his future. He is a star in the making. So you have to be very careful now that you know you have this player. Be very careful who you're choosing to build around him with.
What do you think of my like theoretical trade of Mobley? I know you haven't seen a whole lot of Mobley.
I mean, depending on what else you give, like if it's Jackson number 17 and then one other young guy, whoever it may be,
right?
I'd at least entertain it.
Like Desmond Bane.
Yeah, or, I mean, I love DeAnthony Melton, but one of him or Tyus Jones, like, Clark, I mean, they have plenty of young guys. That's the great thing for Memphis.
Yeah, they would still have a surplus. Yeah. Absolutely. I think that's the road I want to go. I'm actually feeling pretty confident in it. Like, it doesn't even feel hot takey now that I said it. I mean, I think Mobley is that guy. I think he's the guy who fits next to Ja so much better. And it's a shame because I can see the potential there in Jackson Jr. Like I'm not, there's definitely a chance that he goes elsewhere to the team that he's traded to under my, you know, fantasy world here, where he becomes a stud, like a superstar. And then I would look back at it and go, oh, well, geez, that was dumb. But you also have to take into account that what he's shown right now over the first 3 years, it's, like, it's inconsistent, I want to say.
Yeah. I think that's a fair way to phrase it.
Yeah.
So, the other big decision Memphis has financially this summer is what to do with Justice Winslow. He has a $13 million team option. And the long-awaited Justice Winslow breakout season did not happen this year. In fact, he only played 26 games, started one of them, 6.8 points on 35.2% shooting. Played, I believe, 3 minutes in the playoffs. Like, just did not play a ton. So
yeah, I'm done. I'm done.
You're not picking up the teammate.
Nope. I'm done. I'm done waiting. He's just never going to be that guy, I think. I know that we are looking at him missing peas and all that.
Yeah.
Look, I always thought that NBA Twitter, for example, was a little higher on him than I was. Like, I could see the talent level, but I think we reached a point where it just became ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the expectation level and the trust in his capabilities. Yeah, he's solid when he's fully healthy in, like, a fourth option role, but I'm just not there where I would trust him to stay healthy. I don't even know how I would play him. I would much rather just give the ball to Ja and to DeAnthony Melton and or Jaren or post touches to Jonas Valanciunas than I would want Justice Winslow in there taking up possessions for virtually no reason.
I just looked. He had a true shooting percentage of 39.5 this year.
Right.
Wow.
He's generally been a bad shooter. I mean, he had that one outlier year, which was also his best year in 2018-2019, where he shot 37.5% on almost 4 attempts per game. Like, that's where we're looking at him going, oh, see, you're the optimized version. But even then, I mean, I still wasn't blown away by him. I really wasn't. I understand he was like a two-way guy who could handle the ball, who could defend, switch around and all that. That's nice, but I don't know. I think there's a significant ceiling to what he can be as a basketball player.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ideal version was, you know, point Winslow. Like, he can be that secondary ball handler type, because he did average 4.3 assists per game in that season. They only played 11 games last year, but he averaged 4.0 assists per game. But now I'm starting, especially having seen what happened with Josh Richardson after he left Miami.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if Miami's just plugging all these guys into point forward roles because they were just waiting for Jimmy Butler to come. And they're like, oh, actually, just because you can do it doesn't mean you're good at it.
Right.
I mean, Winslow, like, he's overcoming major injuries, so I don't want to totally discount that. So, you know, he could be... I agree with you. $13 million for a guy who didn't produce much this year, and I don't know what you can project out of him moving forward. That seems steep. I don't blame Memphis for making that trade last year because they didn't give up all that much in terms of, you know, these guys were all going to leave most likely at the end of the season anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, take a gamble, see if he gets healthy, see what you can see what you have in him, and if he pans out, then the $13 million team option isn't that bad. That's a totally reasonable price. But, you know, it just didn't work out. So don't double down on the mistake.
Yeah. Go in, like, that is 13 more million you have to spend in free agency.
Right. And if they turn that down, they could have like close to 30 million. So yeah. If you're Memphis, who are there any guys on the market who you'd be going after in particular?
So there is a name. We already brought it up on this show. I just don't know if he fits like from an age perspective, or maybe that doesn't matter.
Okay.
I do think they need another scorer who's really reliable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hate the idea of Norman Powell there.
Oh. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that's a fit, to be honest with you, because they have Dylan Brooks. They obviously, the shot amount is going to go up for Ja as he ages. Like, Jonas Valanciunas was finally unleashed this year, and he did super well.
Mm-hmm.
And they already have a lot of these playmaking guards and, like, shooters. They have Desmond Bain, Melton, as I mentioned, like, Tyus Jones. They have a lot of guards. Grayson Allen, although you can sort of cut him out of the rotation, I think. But they just have guys, right? And I don't know if Powell would fit in there, but I kind of like the theoretical fit of him next to Ja, at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if they want to spend that money. Now, they could be creative and do something else, but that would mean pivoting away from that whole Jaren Jackson Jr., Evan Mobley thing,
mm-hmm.
and try to go for upside with John Collins. But I don't think Collins is a Memphis player.
Yeah.
Like, they played defense.
Right.
They really prioritize ball movement and defense, so I don't think he's that guy. Neither is Lauri Markkanen. So I don't even know if like the restricted free agency market is a place where they can find a lot of options. So, but I would just rather have the flexibility than I would have Justice Winslow. Then, if nothing else, I can take on a bad contract. Like, let me ask you this. If I can get 30 plus million, I think you know where I'm going with this, in cap space, right? And I can absorb a really crap contract. Like, let me just look at it. If I can create $36,016,200
in cap space. Yeah.
How much? I actually need to do more, like, because there are obviously going to be different guys that are going to be attached. But
right,
like, if they take on Kemba, fully knowing it's a 2-year contract,
nope,
and they just get a ton of picks, a ton of young players, do you do it or do you just lay off?
No way.
Okay.
No way. If I'm OKC and I'm a little further behind the rebuild, maybe, but no, I wouldn't.
Because they're playoff.
Yeah, I wouldn't waste 2 years of John Morant's, you know,
that's fair,
rookie contract on Kemba Walker. I mean, I think,
had to ask.
Yeah. That's fair. I think you're right to bring up restricted free agents, though, because, I mean, A, those guys are just going to be younger by default. But B, I think that's where the value is in this free agent class. Like, you could go after a Norman Powell, like a Tim Hardaway Jr. would be a potential upgrade right away, but those guys are, you know, pushing, they're like closer to 30 than they are 20.
Yes.
Whereas restricted free agents, yeah, I agree. John Collins, probably not a good fit in Memphis, not going after Lauri Markkanen. I don't see the fit with John Lonzo Ball necessarily, but.
No, I wouldn't hate it though. Like, yeah, I think that would be fun.
It would be really interesting.
They have so many guards, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but like, I could see throwing a bag at Gary Trent Jr.
Oh, I didn't even think of that one. That's a good one.
I mean, this is what if I'm a team with cap space, I want some team to do what Sean Marks used to do and just throw big offer sheets at these guys just to screw with the other team. Like, Toronto should not be allowed to retain Gary Trent Jr. at a reasonable price.
No, but like, so how far would you go? I agree. So Gary Trent Jr. would be like the perfect Memphis player.
Yeah. I would do like 4 years, 80 to 90 million probably.
Right. Like, really push that up, because he can play the three. Like, he can come in and take Justice's role. Like, he can come in and, well, that's probably Dylan's role now.
Dylan can move up to, like, you could do Ja, Gary Trent, and Dylan together.
Right. Yeah, so Dylan slides up to the three. We're still talking about NBA positions. It's such an archaic thing. And I both agree that positions are meaningless, and still, every single time, we talk about it because it's just burned into the fabrics of our minds. So the wings would be Brooks and Trent, and they would be pretty interchangeable. You have Kyle, who can come in as, like, your ultra Swiss Army Knife's two-way six-man. You have Jaren, you have the depth up front with him, Jonas, Brandon Clark, Xavier Tillman, and even in the backcourt, you also have Desmond Bane. Brian, I love this one. That's a good idea. I love that one. Like, nice. Gary Trent Jr. should be, I'm not saying maxed out, but good Lord, like 20 plus at least.
Yeah.
And to the point where it stings for the Raptors to match.
Yes, exactly.
If they even do.
Exactly. Or if you don't go after him, a Josh Hart could be interesting. Bruce Brown. Yeah. Bruce Brown feels like a Memphis player.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. But no, you like, every name you come up with now is going to be underwhelming after you brought up Aaron Jr.
Right. I'm not saying Josh Hart or Bruce Brown. I wouldn't give those guys $20 million per year. Like, Gary Trent would be my main target. But that's where I think Memphis should go. Younger restricted free agents, and really, you know, push these, even like a Talon Horton Tucker with the Lakers.
Yeah. That's, you know, a good one, like, too.
Or, I mean, Duncan Robinson, if you want to add shooting.
Yeah, I guess he's on a similar age bracket. He's like 26, 27. You can make that work. And plus, he's a shooter, so age doesn't really matter a whole lot in that regard.
Right.
Yeah. No, I'm still locked in on your Gary Trent.
Yeah, me too.
Because he's a comparable shooter, I want to say, to a certain extent. Like, he's not as fluid a shooter as Duncan Robinson is. But, I mean, he's high volume, high efficiency. I mean, that's something right there. Yeah. And he's only 22. He's going to get better.
Yeah.
Like, if Memphis walks out of this summer having traded Jaren and something else for Evan Mobley, and they sign Gary Trent Jr. in free agency, that could be a finals contender in 5 years.
I mean, my hot take is that Portland screwed up and should have traded CJ at the deadline and kept Gary Trent Jr.
Yeah, and I disagreed with you at the time, but I think you're right. I stand corrected. I think that would have been preferable too now.
Yes, right. Especially given what happened. Yeah.
Yeah. God, again, Memphis, they're so interesting, right? And it's not that I want to shake up their roster. Like, I know doing that, or I know trading Jaren would do that. But I think there are avenues wherein they can improve and still improve right off the bat as well. Like, Jaren for Mobley is a long-term play, but then if you sign Gary Trent Jr., you kind of offset the long-term play so you remain competitive in the now.
Right.
Like, Gary Trent and Ja Morant, who will be a year older next year, I mean, that's right there. That's an established duo. And then you have Dylan, who's in his prime. You have Jonas, who's in his prime. You can do all that and still wait for Mobley for a couple of years until he becomes, like, fully ready.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay, yeah. I think we just fixed Memphis.
All right. Well, let's try to fix the New York Knicks now.
All right.
So what do you make of Julius Randle? He, most improved player, Julius Randle, did not have a most improved playoffs. Really seemed to struggle against
the Really? Hawks. Wow. So, yeah.
Before we get into their offseason outlook, what did you make of him in that series? And kind of what are the lessons that the Knicks need to take away from that series now looking ahead to the summer?
Oh, I think there's a different lesson to be had here, which is don't give someone like Julius Randle, who's had this career that he's had, the most improved player award. I will always be bothered by this, and Knicks fans were so upset when I suggested otherwise. But you know what? I don't care. I'm enjoying this just for the Schadenfreude. I really am. So I'm not taking anything away necessarily. I think he just had a piss poor playoffs. He was taking shots that he usually makes, and they were rimming out a lot, but. Remember how a couple of months ago you and I were asking ourselves, is the wild shot taking like a problem?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it sustainable that he takes these leaning shots or fadeaways? Yep. Or in the playoffs, turns out it's not. Like, it's really not. These were just, he was guarded better, more efficiently. Like, there was a higher degree of defensive focus on him than I think he saw at any point in the regular season, which makes sense because it's the goddamn NBA playoffs.
Right.
And he had no counter.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've been saying all along, not with Randle necessarily, but just in general, in the playoffs, teams have more time to game plan for you, so they really harp on your specific strengths and weaknesses. So if I'm the Knicks, I'm thrilled about how this season went, despite the first round knockout. But my takeaway from that series is that Julius Randle is not the number one option on a playoff team. That isn't to say
he's... On a good playoff team.
Right. Well, on a playoff team that actually hopes to move past the first round.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
So that isn't to say that they shouldn't keep Julius Randle moving forward because, I mean, we can get into, it'll probably be more next year, what the outlook is for him moving forward with the Knicks. But, he's only $19.8 million next year. Like, that totally reasonable contract. He's absolutely going to be on that roster. He should be on that roster.
Yeah.
But I'm also realizing, like, if Julius Randle is my number one option in the playoffs, I'm not going very far. So,
right.
Luckily, the Knicks have upwards of $50 million in cap space this summer. So they are now poised to be one of the biggest players on the free agent market after striking out on KD and Kyrie 2 years ago. Now we're right back to where we were, where they could, the world is their oyster. Unfortunately for them, really, pretty much all of the top tier guys, the Giannis, LeBron, Paul George, Rudy Gobert, Drew Holiday, are all off the market. So Kawhi, we'll see what happens with the Clippers Mavericks today. if he's, you know, if he's willing to leave, that's obviously number one with a bullet.
Yes.
Otherwise, Mort, are there any guys who really make sense to you as potential targets for the Knicks?
Lonzo. I can barely restrain myself. Yes, Lonzo Ball. I think this is a situation where Lonzo makes a lot of sense. They need a guy who can take the ball out of Julius Randle's hands a little bit more, both in the regular season and in the playoffs, as this facilitator. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy who can sort of feed off of the attention that Randle gets offensively and spot up for three-pointers. Now, to be fair, Lonzo's defense is a bit inconsistent, but it is, like, there's tremendous upside on that end of the floor for him. And I think the Knicks would greatly appreciate that. I mean, look, under Tips, I think Ball would turn into arguably one of the better guard defenders in the entire NBA over a period of a couple of years. Mm-hmm. So for him to come in and be that facilitator, defender, rebounder, someone who can get the fast break going, and someone who doesn't require, I would say, a lot of shots. So, like, you can still feed the ego of a Julius Randle. You can still feed the shot-hungry mouth of a RJ Barrett. Like, he won't take shots away from those guys. In fact, he would give them more chances to establish themselves in better spots because he's a pass-first point guard. Mm-hmm. And he's got size, Brian. That's really, I think, something they need. They need size. Like, it's tough to match up against versatile size, and he's got that. So I think Lonzo is the clear-cut name to go for if you're the New York Knicks. He has to be, outside of Kawhi Leonard, of course, I think he has to be number one on their list.
Yeah, I mean, I think much like Memphis, if I'm the Knicks, I'm not looking at the unrestricted free agents because, like, yeah, they could go after Kyle Lowry, but Kyle Lowry's 35. Like, what is the point of going after a Kyle Lowry or a DeMar DeRozan or a Mike Conley, where, you know, ideally you're going to build around Randle and RJ Barrett moving forward. That might not be, like, you know, your overall final team construction, but at least next year, like, those are your main centerpiece guys. Both of them are, you know, RJ is in his early 20s. Julius is in his, like, mid to late 20s, but he's in his prime-ish still. So, you know, you can go for a short-term upgrade, but it's not going to get you anywhere long term. So instead, I would go after guys on, you know, more on their developmental timeline. And again, that means restricted Lonzo free Ball. Agents. Yeah. So Lonzo, Gary Trent Jr. is another one here where he could make a ton of sense in that Reggie Bullock role, except he's much better than Reggie Bullock.
Brian, why not both?
Why not? Yeah. I mean, they've got, that's the beauty of having 50 million cap space. Like, they very well could be able to afford both of those guys.
That should be their priority. Going after a brand new backcourt.
Yeah.
Ball and Trent Jr. start from there. You slide Barrett up to be a full-time wing. Randle, of course, is still the primary four. And then I don't know what the hell they figure out at center. Mitchell Robinson, Nerlens Noel. I don't know what their plans are at center. Mm-hmm. I just don't. That seems like one of those things they need to figure out. But that's, at the very least, a pretty strong foursome right there. And then they have a lot of guys who can come off the bench, who they can re-sign. Like, I love their options here. And also, because we need to mention it, Ball and Randle have a history. They played together on the Lakers.
Mm. That is true.
For 1 year, but still. Like, there's a familiarity there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, that, conceptually, that team doesn't sound bad to me. And I think that team's honestly has a much better chance of making it on a deeper run because you're still going to have, well, I guess, yeah, I mean, that is the other question. Well, I mean, so Derrick Rose, I guess, is the other question because he is a free agent this year. But given his history with Tibbs, I feel like he's more likely to return than not.
Figure something out.
Yeah, like, what? How much would you be willing to spend to retain him?
I mean, whatever's left after I spend my cap space.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a fair way to put it.
Yeah, but I mean, also, I'll be honest and say that I don't have a high regard of Derrick Rose. for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. So I'm not interested in trying to carve out money for him personally. The Knicks might be thinking otherwise, in which case, you do you. I wouldn't.
Because you do still have Quickly coming off the bench too. So if
that is also another aspect. Yes, and I have Luka Wildoza coming over, who is, yeah, granted, he's not on a guaranteed deal, mm-hmm. but he should add some much-needed pizzazz to that point guard rotation. I'm just not in any rush to get Derrick Rose back, although Tibbs absolutely is.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the off-court issues with Rose, and no one should ever downplay them, but, you know, in the playoffs, he was their best player.
Yes, yes, without a doubt, he was.
So, I mean, I think it would behoove them, just from a strictly on-court perspective and given his familiarity with Tibbs, like, Rose and Tibbs are like Tobias Harris and Doc Rivers. They could just never be separated. Like, they, you know, Rose is at his best under Tom Thibodeau, and yeah. he should, it would only help him to stay with that team as well. But yeah, I mean, figuring out what the right price is, like, I mean, I wouldn't be thrilled spending more than around $10 million on him. And I would definitely wouldn't do, you know, I would want to do like a 1+1, whether it's a team option or a player option. I honestly don't care.
Well, the deal he was on, that he signed with Detroit and got traded on to the Knicks, that was kind of fair. That was 2 years, $15
million. Yeah, I would do that again. That's what Rondo got last year.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, so here's the thing. Rose is going to be 33 before the start of the season.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's fair to, like, push that salary demand a little bit down.
Yeah. Oh, if you could get him for, like, 210 or 212, by all means.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, I guess center is the other question, too, because, you know, you have Nerlens Noel is going to be a free agent, and I think he probably earned himself a nice little raise with how he played this year. Mitchell Robinson, they have a team option on, and if I'm not mistaken, it's the situation like Jokic a couple years ago, where they could decline it, he'd be a restricted free agent. If they pick it up, he'll be unrestricted next summer.
Correct.
Honestly, if I'm the Knicks, I'd probably just pick it up and don't worry about
it. Yep. I want to say the exact same thing. This is one of the few situations where I'm not bothered by that.
Yeah.
Like with Jokic, you just didn't want to piss him off because, oh, you might leave. If Mitchell Robbins leaves, I'm just like, okay, that's fine. I'll survive that. Like, you're not gonna make or break the future of my franchise whatsoever. Like, I'm good with that. Get the bargain contract for next year and then just see what happens.
Right.
Right,
I mean, see what Obi Toppin turns into. You know, just buy yourself a year.
Yeah, I don't care.
And like, as we said earlier, centers are the cheapest thing you can find in free agents. Like, yeah. Andre Drummond is not going to be that much. So, like, don't overpay, you know, don't decline this option to overpay Mitchell Robinson coming off a season. Like, I guess the one exception would be if Mitchell Robinson comes and tells you, I want to be here long term. I will sign a very team friendly extension.
Yeah, like, okay. I don't know what that contract should be, but if he does that, I'll listen.
Yeah, sure. I'll entertain it, but I'll be like, okay.
So wait, but of course, I assume he'll be speaking through one of his agents, and I just wonder what agency will he be with at that point in time.
Fair question.
Okay, I just know. I mean, because if I'm the GM and I have in my phone, it says Mitchell Robinson's agent, I'll have like five different names.
Right. All right. Let's close out with the Washington Wizards. This team is just sad, man. It's just sad. They had absolutely no chance against the Sixers, even without Joel Embiid, which is just like. Yeah. Russell Westbrook had a great second half of the season, but dear God, was he bad in the playoffs. He was the Sixers' best player, second best player, behind Embiid.
I am Jack's complete lack of surprise.
I know. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. It's like learning to change speeds is one of the most valuable skills for a point guard, and Russ has just never gotten it. Like, he's just 0 to 60 all the time. And, you know, it, I guess, you know, players play with him and say he provides that energy and he sets a good example for his teammates, whatever. But I can't imagine what Bradley Beal is thinking as he clangs his way to another 3-of-19 performance during the playoffs. Like, he was just so damn bad. That said, he's under contract $44.2 million this year, $47.1 in 22-23. So he is going nowhere for the next 2 years. What is Bradley?
Well, we don't know. I mean, every contract apparently is tradable.
That's
right?
True. Maybe he goes for Kemba.
Oh, I like that.
Do you?
I kind of do, because here's the thing. If he goes to Boston, like, he's not going to be... Well, first and foremost, obviously, he's not the primary shot taker in Washington. Bradley Beal is.
Right.
But he's not even going to be the secondary shot taker. That's going to be, like, Tatum and Brown have those two locked down. He'll be, like, the third guy.
Are you sure he would be? That's the problem. Like, if he would just adapt to what... I mean, maybe. Like, if he would, that would be great. But I'm not convinced that would be the case.
God, you're right. I want to be... See, I'm actually trying to be optimistic about Russ because you've been spending so many years telling me I'm just a hater. So I want to be optimistic here. And now when I'm trying to be, you're just Debbie Downer. Okay.
I mean, look, I think he gets an unfair... Like, I think the infatuation with triple-doubles caused people to overcorrect about their frustration with Russ. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I do think, especially there are questions once you get to the playoffs and once teams... It's similar with Randall. Like, they know how to guard you. And they know just build a wall and let you take as many damn jump shots as you want. You're going to hit some. I mean, he hit 3 threes in game 3. He hit 2 threes in game 5. So,
yeah.
But the Sixers didn't change how they were defending him. They were like, cool, keep shooting. Because it's going to, like, we're just playing the odds. And yeah, the odds say you're going to, you know, he was 7 of 20 in game 5.
No, it's bad. You're right. Like, the Celtics need more structure. I mean, I honestly probably trust second-year Peyton Pritchard more than I would trust Russell Westbrook.
To play in control, yeah.
Yeah, that's of course, that's what I mean. Like, yeah. Obviously, Russ has way more talent. And, like, I'm not saying otherwise, but...
So
I I know where you're getting with this. Let's just I have to ask this. Is it fire sale time?
Yes. Well, I mean, I think it's time that Bradley Beal takes control of his future. I know he likes being in Washington, but you just can't play like the sad Bradley Beal meme over and over again. But then also, you know, say you're happy here and you're going to sign an extension here. He's got to look at what Dame's doing in Portland right now and, like, take more control of your future. And whether that's forcing your way out or, you know, just hoping you can get a change in roster. I mean, to the Wizards' credit, Thomas Bryant was out with a torn ACL and yeah. Denny Avdija was out. You know, he suffered an ankle injury, I believe, late
in the
season.
Yeah, it was gruesome, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, they were without two starters in theory, but I don't know that those guys change the outcome at all in that series.
No, they don't, but they do make them significantly more competitive.
Yeah, sure.
No, but I hear you. They wouldn't have beaten the Sixers, but maybe they would have gotten a different seed.
Which yeah, okay.
That would have had a ripple effect. Like if Thomas Bryan was fully healthy, if Denny Avdija was fully healthy and they met the Knicks, for example, would that have been the same series? I don't know.
What do you make of Davis Bertans, who really struggled this year? I mean, he had COVID, yeah. I believe, so that
yeah.
could have played a role.
Well, so when you say this year, you mean in the playoffs?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Overall, he shot only 40.4% in the regular season.
And yeah, like, well, I mean, he had a drop-off similar to Duncan Robinson, but he's still like a high-volume... high efficiency 3-point shooter though.
Yeah. I mean that's what you're getting out of him. Right. Like, and I guess yeah, that's the Duncan Robinson's a good comparison cuz it, you know, that's going to be Duncan's bread and butter skill as well.
Yeah.
But you've got him for the next 4 years at $16 million a pop basically. Yeah.
I don't make a whole lot about of it, to be honest with you, because I think this was a matter of Russ coming in and changing the entire structure of the offense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he got as many shots or possibilities that he deserved. So I'm looking at the future for him. Like, if he's traded elsewhere and he's going to get, you know, the 10 to 12 shots per game that he got last year, I think he'll bounce back. I mean, I've said as much before, I would love to see him at Atlanta. I would love to see him in a place that really embraces the three ball and all kinds of crazy three-point activity.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I'm also well aware that he's got a significant injury history to him. And getting that 50 year was outstanding. That was very well done by his agent. That was really well done. So I think it's time for him to just find somewhere else. I think the Wizards should just be in a fire sale mode. And I think for him to land elsewhere where he can really be a factor would be great for him. The question is, what can you get for him in a trade? I don't know the answer to that at this point.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not untradeable.
No. At that salary, no. But I don't think you're getting a ton of value. And I think ultimately that's what, if the Wizards are going to continue, like Beal wants to say, Westbrook is going to stay, they just need more depth at forward. Like, it was just so insane how they had absolutely no counter for Ben Simmons or Tobias Harris throughout that series. And I think, you know, on a bright spot, Daniel Gafford, who they got at the trade deadline, he was awesome for them. That was a big addition for them. You know, they traded Troy Brown Jr., who was one of their few forwards, and maybe with Denny coming back next year, Rui, especially as the series went on, got better and better. So that, like, there are some signs of young talent on this roster, but I don't know that it's in line with, well, definitely not Westbrook's trajectory, but also Beal's at this point. Like,
when
you have Rui, Denny, and Gafford, like, maybe that's a, you know, and you're going to trade, if you trade Beal, like, you'll get a ton for him as well. You're almost, like, at a spot where rebuilding might not be as painful as it would have been a year or two ago.
Right. I agree with you. Would you brought up Dame previously.
Mm-hmm.
Would a Dame Bradley Beal backcourt?
Oh my god!
That would be pretty ridiculous, right?
Yes.
The question is, who goes where, and what's the deal?
Right. Yeah, like, CJ would almost have to be the salary matching, but you would almost have to loop in a third team at that point, because I don't know why Washington. You know, if Washington's trading Bradley Beal, you're not trading him for another veteran on a big contract, like a win-now guy. Like, you are trading him for
draft picks.
Yeah, an Anthony Davis haul, where it's just a bunch of young guys and a bunch of draft picks.
Yeah.
And
you basically need to get OKC involved.
Or New Orleans.
Yeah. Yeah, but see, this is the issue with those two, right? Because, like, New Orleans is rebuilding themselves. Yeah. They don't want to take on CJ.
No, I'm saying them for Beal.
Oh, so Beal goes there. Well, I want to find a scenario where Beal and Dame ends up together.
Oh, good luck.
yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I thought when you said we were looping in a third team.
No,
you probably can't. I don't know what to do if I'm Washington. Yeah, I would pull the trigger now.
Yeah.
I just would.
Yeah.
I would take on every measly bad contract that I could, as long as it's attached to several draft picks or young players.
Yeah. Because, I mean, at this point, like, you can ride out the last 2 years of Russ's deal if you need to. But yes, I think you're right. You could trade Bertans for something. You can trade Thomas Bryant for something. You know, the absolute worst thing you can do if you're Washington. Like, yes, Beal has pledged his loyalty over and over again, but if he has one more season like this, and he looks around next summer and sees a team has cap space and can present him with a much better chance to win a ring, and he walks, if you lose Bradley Beal for nothing, not only are you screwing over the past couple years, but, I mean, that losing that caliber of talent is probably going to handicap you moving forward too. Like the Rui, Denny, at least, you know, through the time their rookie contracts run. And then at that point, you're going to waste, like, this is the time to capitalize if you're Washington, because you've got all of these guys. You have Rui, Denny, and Gafford under contract, under cheap contracts for the next 2 years. This is the time to strike.
Golden State.
For who?
No, for Beal.
I know, who is Golden State? You're sending back, I guess, Wiggins, Wiseman.
Well, let's start with Wiseman and the two picks this year. So I believe it's top three protected. The one they're getting from Minnesota this year. Yeah, so if it lands at number four, for example, then, and let's say Golden State also sticks at 14 with their own draft pick, then it's 4-14, James Wiseman, Andrew Wiggins, I guess.
Yeah, just for the salary.
Yeah, for Beal. I don't hate that.
No, I don't either. Because then, I mean, it lets you move on. Like, you're not going to re-sign Robin Lopez either way, probably.
No.
Who was very good for them this year. That's not...
But he's old. He doesn't fit their timeline.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's... Oh, my God. The rest of the league will throw a complete protest. But, yeah, that's a good starting point, at least. If Golden State needs to include... They probably need to include more picks.
All right, in that case, the Minnesota pick, their own pick this year, we're talking about like how 2023 is potentially the year where we'll see the double draft, right? Like, it's still up in the air.
There's so much uncertainty. I don't think we can project it out at this point, but...
All right, but let's say, like, it could happen, right? Okay, then maybe let's say 2024, if we think that's a more fair estimate.
Well, they owe their 2024.
They owe their 24. Yeah, I was just reminded. Yeah, so, okay. And they can't, then if they owe their 2024, they can't even move their 2023.
Right. So, yeah, they could trade the 2021, both 2021 picks, or they could trade the Minnesota pick and then 2022, but you'd probably want the 2021 pick because they're
going to be better. I have it. All right, okay. So some team out there is undoubtedly going to be interested in Kelly Oubre Jr. If you can somehow, maybe a team over the cap wants Kelly Oubre Jr. So if you can finagle a sign and trade where you take back something and a pick or a young player as compensation, and you redirect that guy or that draft pick in direction of Washington.
That's interesting. Or, I mean, just trade, like, a 2026 pick as well.
That, too. I just think, like, you want somewhat immediate return. Yeah. Like, 2026 is still 5 years out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, if I'm Washington, I would want the picks further out. Like, other than the ones this year where I know where they landed. Because by that point, Steph is going to be much, you know, like, Clay, Steph, Dre, those guys are probably going to be either out of there or, like, on the back end of their careers. Whereas if I'm getting a 2023 pick, there's no reason to expect a Warriors team with Steph, Beal, Clay, and Dre in 2 years.
That's true. But Beal's still going to be around in 2026, though, so he might still make that. But you're right. Like it definitely makes it more possible that the pick would be of good value in 2026. Then the key comes down to protections, and that's where if I'm Washington, I'm saying, don't you dare try to convince me that I need protections on these.
Fully players. Unprotected. The only way I would do it on Washington.
All right. So I think we have it now. Like it's then forget about the Kelly Oubre thing. It's number four or where wherever it lands.
Even number six, 14. Whatever.
Yeah. Right now, slot is number six. So it's the Minnesota pick. And hell, look, in the minute, we can just call it the Minnesota pick because if it doesn't convert this year, then it's unprotected next year and could be number one. So you know what? It doesn't even matter. Like the Minnesota pick, their own pick, James Wiseman, Andrew Wiggins, and a 2026 unprotected first rounder for Bradley Beal.
I would absolutely offer that if I'm Golden State, and I would seriously consider it if I'm Washington.
I think I might do it if I'm Washington.
Yeah, I probably would too. Yeah.
I'm so glad when we fix teams, Brian.
All right. Our work here is done. We're signing off. All right. Now, that is a good place for us to wrap up. So thank you all, as always, for listening today. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by my fellow team architect, Morten Jensen. Mort, get your construction hat ready. We got to fix the Clippers or Mavericks soon as well.
Both of them?
Well, one of them. Well, probably both of them eventually, but one of them shortly.
I'll find my Taj Gibson hard hat and lunch pail for sure.
Good. All right. Later, man.
Later.